Welcome at Vision du Réel. Here we are with our next interview with a wonderful documentary film that I could already see at Sundance, and it's by Gabriela Olszewan and Jack Weissman. Both are here with me now. Hi.
Hi.
Hey there.
Thank you for having us.
You had your Sundance premiere with the Nuschens Bear. This film is about polar bears and their relationship with humans in an Alaska town. It's called Polar Bear, Capital of the World. The humans have intruded into the polar bear's terrain, and now the polar bears are kind of getting their original terrain back. That's what we should say. But also the polar bears are a huge attraction, of course, for tourists. You know, Everybody wants to see a polar bear. And now these bears have become a nuisance, apparently, to the people. How did you find that story?
The story actually takes place in northern Canada. And Gabby and I were students in Toronto studying film. And polar bears are sort of a symbol of Canada. And this place is kind of well known within Canada and within Canadian history. And we went up there as students and were totally shocked by the difference between what we thought about polar bears and what we were seeing on the ground and the images that had been captured that we'd seen in magazines and in Planet Earth. You know, many of those images were taken in Churchill, and they show this bear, this majestic creature in this pristine wilderness with not being molested by people or obscured by telephone poles or any sort of human infrastructure. All that's removed from the images to create this illusion of wilderness. And so when we were there and confronted by this circus, we were just shocked. So from the first trip there, it was a jaw-dropping experience, I guess, both the bears themselves, but also the economy around the bears and the way that this community of Churchill was coexisting. And from there, we sort of started to ask questions, you know, what happens to these polar bears after a tour that we're basically on ends? Where does that bear go? It turns out there are other communities north of Churchill that have a very different relationship with these bears, a very different relation, different history, have been forcibly relocated into Arvia and Nunavut. So there are two communities at the heart of the film that are both in Canada.
Did you personally get into contact with any polar bears while shooting the film?
Around this time of year, there's a lot of bears there. And the way that we filmed, in order to protect ourselves and the bears and to have a cinematic look, we mounted all of our cameras onto the front of our vehicles so that we could be contained in the car. We could control the camera completely from inside. So change batteries, cards, that kind of thing. Because you have to be so careful. If you get too close to a bear and it turns into a bad interaction, they'll get potentially shot. It was very important to us to have a respectful distance. We've seen so many bears while filming this film, and they're all individuals, and so you can watch them have their own behaviors. As much as the film looks like it's a single bear, what we really did was we followed a type of bear rather than one bear. So what we cast was a young male bear that's more of a nuisance, one that tends to go for the garbage
and
pushes the boundaries. We knew that was the type of bear we wanted. If you're to follow one bear too closely, then it would be harassment. So we were being respectful to the animals was very important in our process.
Yeah, an enormous amount of thought went into the way that we filmed the animals, and we thought about research around polar bears as we were developing this plan. And there are types of research which are active research, where they pursue an animal, they tranquilize it, you see it in the film. And then there are passive research techniques, which are much more collection. Let the bear come to you, or you don't try to alter its path too much. It's not as aggressive. And so that was a really inspiring model for how we thought about filming the bears.
These different attitudes that you describe in interacting with the animals are also reflected in the community. We have the Inuk community of the native Canadian population.
Yeah, it's complicated. Both communities actually have indigenous history and indigenous roots. They exist in different provinces, different states, so to speak, in Canada. One is an indigenous territory and one is a province of Canada. And because of those governments, they just have different ways of living, different ways of managing wildlife.
Yes.
It's almost like two different countries within Canada that share one single group of bears.
And I would also add that in Churchill, during bear season, it becomes a lot more colonial types of people, because the big tours are operated by a lot of people who don't live there most of the time. They come in and they're generally white. However, there are a few indigenous run tours in Churchill as well. They're smaller and they're really great.
And that's who we would recommend to anybody who's thinking about Churchill. We're not telling people not to go and experience these animals. It's an incredible place. But I think just we wanted people to understand the full complexity of at least what we experienced while we were making this film and present it in this way that doesn't judge, but reveals all of the fault lines without saying this side is right and that side's wrong.
The main difference in the interaction is that the more westernized community sees the bears as a problem, as an issue that has to be somehow dealt with, while the native communities see the bears as part of nature, as a part of their surroundings, and also much more as individuals. Often when you talk about bears, bear, the boundaries of the bears, the personality of the bears. It's true. Animals do have a personality. I think everybody who ever has even just a pet knows, yeah, and that we should treat them with much more respect. How did you feel about it?
For me, I always felt it's very complicated. I understand how Churchill operates. There's a community that's lived there for a long time. Living with the bears is very complicated because they also have children they have to protect. They have their own way. And then they have strangers coming in all the time and they have to kind of teach them how to operate. And so there is this robust conservation effort to try to keep people safe from bears and bears safe from people. And so it's deeply complicated. But then I think we feel very enriched with the time we got to spend with people in Arviat just to have a different point of view. And I think for both Jack and I, we really are curious people and we like to think about just different perspectives and have a more holistic worldview when we approach something. And so we feel really grateful, I think, that we got to spend the time that we did with someone like Mike who could speak about his experiences and just give us a broader viewpoint on it.
I think the word I am using to describe it is dialectic, where two opposing things can be true at the same time. And we have a tendency now in our culture to simplify things in order to make them digestible and so that they're more palatable. And I think that's an enormous disservice both to the arts, but also to us as people. And so for me, it was never a matter of being really attached to one particular view and falling too deeply into it. It was about empathizing with every perspective within this spectrum of people and trying to be authentic to what, you know, we were seeing in the movie.
The conditions in Churchill nature-wise, they're beautiful, but also extremely harsh. It's super cold. It's a ton of snow. So how difficult was it to shoot?
Well, because we were using this vehicle system that we developed where, again, the camera's outside on the exterior, the camera's facing the harsh weather, and we are very cozy inside having snacks and listening to music. It was a lot of waiting.
It was complex for the camera system because, you know, it has to have its own enclosed.
It's a camera that is used for helicopters and for other aviation kind of...
But it's just a more complex camera system. And also, it's worth noting that bear season happens in the fall. The winter up there can get to like negative 40s. Jack was there for a little bit in the super cold for when the bears are coming out of their dens. But otherwise, it was pretty manageable. And I think because of the nature of this film, we're really focused on not the bears that are out, but the bears that are hanging around the community.
The most problematic bears. We wanted the bear that nobody wanted. That was the bear that was most interesting to us because that told us the most about who we are.
And how was your interaction with the indigenous community? Was it hard to get access?
Extremely. It was extremely hard. It took 7 years at least in order to feel comfortable even talking about this idea publicly. It's never linear, your relationship to your subject. You know, you have these breakthroughs, but then you have these setbacks. And the term another indigenous filmmaker used, Zach Khalil, is moving at the speed of trust. And I think that wasn't a term that we understood at the time we were making the film, but it really rings true now, where we were going at the pace that was comfortable for the people that we wanted to be behind the camera or in front of the camera. And so earning Mike's trust, the narrator of the film, I mean, that was sort of the ultimate outcome of all of this time spent with different elders and screening. The feature film is based on a short film that is with The New Yorker, and that's a whole kind of separate journey into itself. But we used that short film as a model to explain to Arviat as a community what we were trying to do, and that was an enormously helpful tool. And so eventually, through many conversations, through many years of doubt and not being sure if we should be making this film, through the death of Mike's son, eventually Mike sort of emerged to us as this central narrator, and he really wanted to be part of the project because he saw it as an opportunity to heal and to talk about something that was devastating that he hadn't really had the chance to talk about in this way. And so it was enormously therapeutic for him and for us, I think, making it, but it was really, really difficult.
And I would just like to add, I think what's so important about independent filmmaking is that because we are an independent film, we could take this kind of time, because normally when you get these budgets, you get these schedules, and then it's very common for Southerners to go up to the North and just have a plan and just want to make something. And so everyone up there is very frustrated by this. It's a very fascinating place. And so it happens a lot that people want to make films there and then they just want to kind of shoehorn what they already expect. And so I think part of the reason why we did get the access that we did is because we really did take the time because we could, because we didn't have any money. So we just went when we could and we followed the rules.
We got the permits. We took a step back when we were asked to take a step back.
We were able to, rather than go in with an idea and try to make it happen, our idea was made by our time spent and our time listening.
It was a beautiful collaboration. At the beginning, it never felt like it was going to be possible to get to the point that we have. But now that we're here, it's been one of the greatest gifts was being able to hear Mike's story.
And this is why I think having independent cinema is very, very important.
We see some impressive images in your documentary. imagery, like those bears, for example, being lifted by helicopters. And that's also very surreal image, you know, a polar bear floating through the air. Was there any great footage that you, for some reason, either couldn't cap, that you couldn't put into the film?
One scene that just didn't fit in the film that was very beautiful, though it doesn't sound like it would have been, but it was Chicken Bus. So we had this beautiful bus that was all lit with red and it had hoarfrost on the front. And it's an example of how living in Churchill is very complicated, because just to have something as simple as a chicken coop can be problematic because it attracts the bears. So it has to be in a moving vehicle.
The film is a compilation of all the greatest hits.
Yeah,
these are the things that made our jaw completely drop. You know, some of these things have never been photographed before, never been witnessed by people before. The bear escaping the trap, for example, people had heard that it happened, but it never actually been photographed or seen. And so we had these moments, you know, you go out for 250 days we spent filming. And in that time, you know, you may only have like 20 great moments, 10 great moments. And so then you try to create a narrative with those.
So it's really about a lot of sitting and waiting, but we feel really happy with everything that ended up in the film, I would say.
You had a huge success at Sundance. Yeah, you won in the documentary competition. How does it feel for you to have now this success in the film going off like this?
Pretty surreal, because it was really difficult to make. We put so much care and energy into it for years. You make something kind of in your little community, in your little corner, and you have no idea if it's going to resonate with people. So, I mean, just having people that we respect, like the jury that was at Sundance were filmmakers we really admire. And so having them acknowledge the film like that was just, we're just very grateful.
It's obviously very satisfying to spend 10 years working on something and then it work out like this, because the odds were very much not in our favor or really any filmmaker's favor, because it is so difficult to make a film, especially now. So I think we're just not taking any of it for granted. And all the screenings have been, you know, full or selling out. And it feels like there's still an audience growing for the film. And so we're just so thankful that we're getting this opportunity.
Do you already work on your new documentary project?
Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to know what we're up to next, but we can't tell you.
Fair enough. It's 50% of the times I ask that question, I get that answer.
No, I think we're fascinated by storytelling. We're fascinated. I mean, like Gabby said, we're like really curious people, and there's inspiration in anything, you know? And so I think it's about taking some time to really consider what's important to us after going through this experience, being present through the experience too, not being so focused on what's next, but really enjoying it. But yeah, we got lots of ideas that we're going to do.
So what would you hope for the audience to take away from your film if they see it?
I hope that they never look at a polar bear the same way again.
How important it is to consider multiple sides to something and to be open.
The importance of empathy and discussion and having different viewpoints.
And care for this planet and the animals that we share this planet with.
That's a wonderful closure to this interview. Thank you so much, Jack Weissman and Gabriella also.
No problem.
This bear is now at Vision du Réel, and as soon as it gets a local release, you read about it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.